Okay, so we begin this week Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Vayikra, and we mentioned a few weeks ago when we started the second half of Shmos about how we're dealing with details and concepts that we don't actually practice bizman hazeh, and that may make the learning a little more difficult, but in a sense it actually makes it more important and perhaps more meaningful because we have this notion of neshama parim sfoseinu, that which we are not able to perform, we connect to specifically through learning, and therefore the more we don't actually do it yet, the more learning about it is important for us. And this is a concept which may apply to everything in halacha, but is sourced specifically within kedushin. So as we study the karbanos, we know that we have this idea, that's where the Gemara identifies it, and it may have to do specifically with the nature of bringing a karban and how a karban is meant to make us reflect upon certain ideas, and therefore, even if we're not able to bring the karban, so we still do the best we can to try to internalize the concepts. And this is something that the Chafetz Chaim discussed in his introduction to a Sefer Likutei Halachos, where he wrote, along the style of his Mishneh Berurah, he wrote to paskin all the dinim in Karbanos, which otherwise we didn't have a code of law for. Only the Rambam really codifies the law of Karbanos. In the Shulchan Aruch, it's not there because the Shulchan Aruch only codified the laws that were relevant in his time. And the Mishneh Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, as a Kohen, anticipated that the Mashiach will come any minute, and we have to be ready to know how to apply the halachos to the Karbanos. So he wrote his Sefer Likutei Halachos. And in the Hakdama, he talks about this question about whether this notion that learning can count as doing the mitzvah, is that something that is applicable by all mitzvahs? So if you're on a desert island on Rosh Hashanah and you don't have a shofar, you're on a desert island on Pesach and you don't have matzah, so you have Wayu Torah and you have all the laws, the shiurim about these mitzvahs, so can you learn with those resources about matzah and fulfill the mitzvah of matzah through learning? Or is this something that's unique to Karbanos? So that's a discussion to be had there. And what we know is that at least it's true by Karbanos, and perhaps all the more so because of the notion that the Karbanos is there to, the body of the Karbanos is there to focus us on these concepts and to be able to reflect upon them. And there was a major debate between the Rambam and the Ramban on the purpose of Karbanos. It's a topic that needs to be addressed as we start learning Sefer Vayikra. And the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim has a conception of Karbanos that the Ramban objected to. That the Rambam understands that the Karbanos were essentially a reaction to Avodah Zarah. There's two different versions of this. One that the Jews were exposed to idolatry where something was sacrificed, and even though that wouldn't necessarily have been the model of our religion otherwise, but we weren't able to relate to a religious practice without the notion of sacrifice, and therefore we integrate Karbanos into our religion as well. And the other approach he has, which is one that's particularly relevant to Korban Pesach, which is on our minds right now for synergy purposes. So the notion that we find, and here Shabbos HaGadol is perhaps upon us, if we call the Shabbos HaGadol. So one of the ideas of Shabbos HaGadol, different theories why it's called HaGadol, is because of the great nace. What was the great nace? That the Jews were able to sacrifice a lamb, which was worshipped by the Egyptians, and to survive the experience, and not be murdered by the Egyptians for this act of disrespect to their God. And indeed, it is a refutation to their God, and that is a major part of what the Korban Pesach represents. And according to the Rambam, Korbanos as a whole, in sacrificing animals that were revered by other religions, makes a statement of the fact that it's only God who is God over the world, and these animals are certainly not to be worshipped. In fact, are sacrificed to him instead. So there's two different versions of how the Rambam understands that the korbanos that we have are a reaction to Avodah Zarah, and it's a concept, again, which is specifically the case by Korban Pesach. So the Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, the Ramban disagrees with this. He doesn't like the whole idea that it seems to portray the korbanos as something perhaps to the Eved, or not something that has an inherent significance within Judaism, but as something which is only a reaction. Which is not to say that the Rambam denies that korbanos have a permanent role within halacha. And the Rambam does record korbanos as something which is going to have applicability to halacha l'maisa b'zman hamikdash. And even though the Rambam, unlike the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam paskin the halachos that were not practiced in his day, but he only wrote down the halachos that would be practiced ultimately. So if it was just a mitzvah l'daros, he didn't record that in the Mishneh Torah. He recorded the halachos that would be relevant. So therefore it's clear that the Rambam does see korbanos as a enduring part of halacha, even though as its history and its reasoning, he has this approach to it. There's some debate about the view of Cook, that the halacha, the aliyah we're going to talk about today, talks about the korban mincha. And when we say Shemona Esrei every day, so we quote the pasuk of Malachi, "V'arva LaHashem Mincha Yehuda v'Yerushalayim," that we anticipate that it will be pleasing to God the mincha that we're going to bring, which is a food offering. It's not a offering of an animal. So Rav Kook is quoted as having understood that Lavo in the perfected world, in the messianic era, so we're all going to be vegetarians. That's a scary thought or a welcome thought, I guess, depending on your perspective on that, but that the idea of eating animals is not a perfect vision of how we're ultimately meant to be, and that the korbanos also are going to be menachos, and therefore we anticipate in that pasuk and in that recitation that we anticipate the mincha. So that, I guess, we'll have to wait and see what happens, but in the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, so he brings all the halachos of animal korbanos, and nonetheless, he understands them in Mar Nevuchim with this kind of a history. So the Ramban doesn't like that. So the Ramban writes that there is a clear meaning to korbanos, and that the idea is that we are supposed to see ourselves within that korban, that we're supposed to feel like whatever is happening to that animal is something that really could have happened to us, and by the grace of God, we survived. And especially in the context of korbanos that are brought for chatoim, so we should see that as an impetus to tshuva and to growth, and to understand that we were saved from this fate, and we are meant to change and to be better. So that's important background to the whole notion of korbanos, the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. But it's also relevant specifically to the details that we'll see in this aliyah. So with that, let's look at these psukim, at least some of them. So we find this second aliyah begins with Pasuk Yudalid, and the two themes in this aliyah are the korbanos that are birds, the ofos, and the menachos. So here the Pasuk says, V'yemei mena'of, Ola Karbanola Hashem, the Hikriv Min Hatorim, Omin Ben Hayona as Karbano. So if somebody is going to offer a Karban of birds, so then he should bring from Torim or turtle doves, Omin Ben Hayona, those are young doves. So the Al-Sheikh explains that this whole language of this Pasuk is, here we're talking about a Karban that is brought by an Ani. Karban is less lavish, less expensive than a animal korban, so this is something that an ani brings. So the emphasis here of korbano, which appears twice in the pasuk, the Al-Sheikh says that this is because the ani feels that maybe his korban is not so impressive to God, it's the korban of a poor person. So the Torah emphasizes that no, it's even better that korbano Hashem, this is his korban, and the attitude that he's able to bring, that he wishes it could be more, that itself counts as a carbon. And the Naim Latorah notes that the double language of Karbanot is to highlight the Hashivas, indeed, that this is just as significant as the Karban of a wealthy person, although it wouldn't work for a wealthy person. It has to only work specifically for who it's appropriate for, and therefore this language of Karbanot is highlighted here. It's also reflective, then, of this whole idea that a korban is about its connection to the individual, that the korban can differ for different people of different means, because the nature of a korban is that it is a sacrifice from that person, the word literally means, and the degree to which it's a sacrifice is what makes it meaningful. So it doesn't matter to a Kaddish Baruch Hu whether it's big or small. It matters the degree in which it reflects a sacrifice from the one bringing it, which is important for many, many reasons, important for among the reasons that we just mentioned as far as the nature of what a karban is and the whole idea that it's that act of giving over to God that brings one closer. A karban from the language of karov, of coming closer. And of course it's theologically crucial because we don't think that God actually needs anything from us. And so one who would think that a korban is defined by objective terms, that a better, more expensive korban is objectively better than a less expensive korban, regardless of who's bringing it, so that in addition to all of its other problematic aspects, that would seem to be suggesting that God needs this, and somebody who is able to bring a better korban is therefore doing a better job because he's providing God with what he needs. So of course that's not the case. We understand that the mitzvos bichlal are reflective of our commitment, and certainly the concept of a korban, we're not bringing these korbanos because God is hungry, so to speak. We're bringing the korbanos because of what they say about our relationship. And that makes it even more central, really, if you go back to the beginning of the parsha. So the very first halacha that is derived in Karbanos, it's derived from Chazal, from the Lashon of the Pasuk, in the beginning of the parasha, of Adam ki Yakriv mikem Karban, that Chazal understands from that Pasuk that a Karban has to be legitimately owned, and it can't be from Gezel. It's not appropriate or permissible or acceptable to steal something and then offer it as a Karban. And for sure, that's true for the general issue of mitzvah haba, the aveira, and the notion that we don't do a mitzvah through illegitimate means, and that's always important. But it's also the case that teaching this in the context of korbanos is especially significant, because if you were to think that you could steal something and offer it as a korban, not only is that a problem of the ends that justifying the means and of an illegitimate process, but it is a completely warped understanding of what a korban is. Because the only motive to steal something and offer that as a korban would be that you think that God needs this object, and therefore maybe he would appreciate it even if I got it to him through theft. But if we understand that God doesn't need our korbanos, this is something that we do because of our relationship to him, so the whole concept wouldn't even make sense. And therefore, this is crucial not only to issues of doing mitzvot through a proper method, but through understanding what a korban is. And it touches upon a major theological underpinnings of how we relate to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Okay, so that's important as a general premise. So the details here of the birds, the Shnei Torim, or Shnei B'nei Yona, so the Ramban has a discussion here that the Torim, the turtle doves, here these are adult turtle doves, and he explains that they are faithful to each other, and when one dies, they don't get replaced by the spouse. And this should reflect also the loyalty that Jews have to God, that Jews cleave to God. And that's a part of the imagery. Again, the idea that the korbanos are meant for us to reflect upon their details and to try to interpret what exactly is the message. So this is a part of what he's doing here. And in the context of the Yonah, so it's B'nai Yonah, so we're talking about young birds, because they increase the love in the nest, and the bigger birds won't let them be touched. But the older birds, they get jealous. They actually end up separating because of their jealousy of others. And Yaakov Kamenetsky has a observation about this that shows the irrationality of jealousy. And it doesn't make sense. They end up separating because of that. And that's in general an issue, that kina is a mida that is based in irrationality, that the belief that somebody else has what you deserve, when in actuality Kadosh Baruch Hu gives everybody what he deserves and what he needs. It's a irrational approach to be jealous of someone else, and that's what's reflected here as well. Okay, the Balaturim has an observation that he notes that when in context of Yoledes, he writes this later, Parakid Beis, that in the context of Yoledes, so there we find that the Yonah is preferred, and that if you have a Yonah, you shouldn't take a tour. So he writes there, that's because you only use one, and they won't remarry, and that's here the Sam Derech of Simcha Lissel Breit has a observation, but you see here the sensitivity of the Torah, even to the animals. Okay, so this next pasuk tells us, Yikrivo HaKohen Al HaMizbeach, U'malak Es Rosho, V'hikter HaMizbeachav, and Insa Damo Alkir HaMizbeach. So the Kohen brings it to the Mizbeach, and he does Malika, which is a different type of killing the animal we have for birds than we have for animals. When it comes to animals, you know, we have Shechita, and here Malika is a whole different kind of process. And there's a lot to try to understand about Malika, whether Cohen uses his fingernail to break the neck of the bird. And Oznaim LaTorah, Litzke Rav explains that normally when it comes to Shechita, we learned last year, at the beginning of the year, that most of the Rishonim understand that the purpose of Shechita by an animal is that it's supposed to be the most painless kind of death, and it's supposed to be the most humane. So when it comes to Malika, which is specifically for birds in the context of Korbanos, so it doesn't seem like we see that as the same priority. So the explanation he has is based on the Ramban that we were just saying a minute ago, that if we want to identify with the object, with the animal that's being brought, so here there is a difference that since this is the Korban of an Ani, so when it comes to an usher, so an usher is happy with his life, he wants to live, and the notion of dying like the animal is something that will set him in focus. But when it comes to the poor person, so he may not be as afraid of dying, so here's a more painful death to show that there is still something that is worse than that, and that you should be afraid of that, and that you should want instead to live and to recognize that you can accomplish and grow. And that's perhaps the message. The idea of taking out its beak, as Rabbeinu Bachya comments, that also has to do with the gazelle point that we were discussing a minute ago, that since it eats from gazelle, so therefore that has to be removed, because that shouldn't be brought as a korban. The Gemara says in Zvachim that Malika has to happen at the Mizbeach itself, and the Torah Tanima explains that because small is only a little bit of blood, so if you're going to check, if you were going to kill the animal elsewhere and then take the blood in a kli, so it's so little it's just going to stick to the kli, there isn't going to be enough. And that being the case, so if it had to happen at the Mizbeach, so that it has to be a Kohen. And even though Malika parallels Shechita, and Shechita could be done by a non-Kohen, by a Zar, but that's because it could have happened further away. When it comes to the Malika, so the Malika has to be done at the Mizbeach, so then that has to be done through the Kohen himself. Okay, so let's shift to the second part of the Iliya, where we talk about the Karban Mincha, that begins with Parak Beis. So here, Beis Aleph, the Pasuk says, V'nefesh kisakiv Karban Mincha v'Hashem solusiya karbano. So if you want to bring a korban mincha, a meal offering, so it should be solus, it should be fine wheat flour, and you pour oil on it, and then you put levona on that as well. So the notion of nefesh here, as the pasuk begins, so the Gemara has the idea that it has to be there's a halachic ramification here that it can't be done by shutzus, it can only be brought as an individual. And the Gemara also comments that the language of nefesh is to highlight the fact that here the ani is giving what he's able to give, so it's like he's giving his whole soul. Again, like we said before, that it's not something that's measured by its monetary value, but it's measured by the level of sacrifice that's involved. And that's something that has great significance, that he gave his whole soul. And the Rav Sal Rudinsky in his Sichos Mishkan B'Tzalel, so he notes, it sounds like the Gemara is giving two different drushes on one pasuk, that it's considered as if he gives his whole soul, and that it's not brought to shutvas. And the idea that a mincha can only be brought by one person isn't really always the case, because we do have the notion of a mincha b'tzibur. So he explains that really this is all the same idea, that when it comes to the idea of a mincha being like it is the soul of the ani, so that shows that, like we were saying, that we're not interested in the object for its value, we're interested in what it represents about the person bringing it. So therefore, it's not going to be something that gives itself to shutfus, because if we were interested in contributing something where we would look at the value, so that it could make sense for some people to get together and bring it as a partnership. But if we're interested in what it represents about the individual giving it, so therefore, by its very nature, that's not something that gives itself to shutfus. That's something which has to come from the individual. But in the case of mincha of the tzibur, so that's because that's the corporate Israel, that's the Jewish people as an entity. So when we look at Klal Yisrael as an entity, so then that's again seeing it essentially as one thing, as one individual, so to speak. And for that purpose, the mincha of a tzibur is something different than the notion of partnership. And he also notes that the Gemara in the end of Menachos, and after Kufi Raman Aleph, is that Tamidei Chachamim Oskin B'Torah B'chol Makom are compared to a mincha. And that it represents also the involvement of Tamidei Chachamim in Torah represents Mesiras Nefesh, represents this idea of giving of oneself. And but the Tziv comments here that the idea of nefesh is also to represent the pnimius, represent the inner soul, because the mincha, with its introspection that it provokes, is there to help us address issues in our midos, and therefore this language of the inner personality of the nefesh is able to convey that. The Chassam Sofer, in his Sefer Torah Moshe, so he notes that the idea that we have of Darko Shel Ani Lahavi Mincha, that a poor person is likely to bring a mincha, so it's not necessarily so obvious that should be true, because when it comes to comparing it to a bird, so a small bird could actually be less expensive than a carbon mincha. So why are we assuming that an Ani is going to bring a mincha? Maybe he'll be more likely to bring the bird. So he notes that it's true if you're going to go to a store and you have a choice of buying flour or buying a small bird, so maybe the bird is cheaper than the flour. But the flour can also come from leket shichul pei. It can come from the charitable donations that make their way to the ani. So if that's the case, it's really all he has. It really doesn't, it's not even the money, it's just his basic basic welfare, what he receives for his sustenance, and he gives of that, so he's really giving of himself. So this whole idea that it's really the ani sacrificing in that absolute sense, so that is true even more with the korban mincha than it is with the korban health. And using that, the Meshech Chacham explains that that's why the idea of that pasuk that we mentioned before, of Arva LaHashem Minchas Yehuda V'Yerushalayim, so that's something that is particularly relevant. Why do we focus on mincha? So we mentioned before Rav Kook's notion that the idea attributed to Rav Kook that Lasa Lava were only going to have menachos. So Meshech Chachma says differently. It's not assuming that that could be the case, but that the Karban Mincha has its particular significance because it represents this real sacrifice from the person. And by Simon, so we spend a sefer in Mebarach and Vayikra, we'll mention the Mebarach again in a minute. So he quotes from various svarim, but according from the Balatanya, that there is also Mesiras Nefesh here, that Mesiras Nefesh in the absolute sense refers to giving up one's life, but doesn't have to always be that dramatic. Say Matli Kadla Kula, Matli Kadla Palga, that a little bit of being killed is like the totality of being killed on a spectrum. So a person being able to push off his yetzer to any degree, that is also a aspect of Mesiras Nefesh, and that's a part of what is being represented here.